Hi, I'm William Tullett from Anglia Ruskin University in Cambridge.
And I'm Hannah McCann from the University of Melbourne in Australia.
And welcome to the Pandemic Sensory Archive, a collection of voices from sensory experts on the fate of the five senses during and after the COVID-19 pandemic.
This project has been sponsored by the British Academy, and we hope that you enjoy the interview.
Okay, so welcome to the Pandemic Sensory Archive. Today we're going to be talking to Andrew Mitchell. And I'm going to start by asking Andrew if you just want to introduce yourself and give us a sense of your expertise when it comes to sound.
Sure. Yeah, thanks for having me on. So my name is Andrew Mitchell. I'm currently a researcher in urban soundscapes at University College London. And my research sort of focuses on trying to understand people's experiences and perception of sound in urban spaces, and particularly trying to build a machine learning model to predict how people will perceive a space, you know, whether they'll find a space, the soundscape of a space to be pleasant or annoying. And I focus on sort of the sonic or acoustic reasons for that. What things about the sound actually lead to people's perception, and how does that interact with the environment? And so my background getting into that was I've worked as an acoustics consultant for in architecture. So I was helping design buildings, dealing with traffic noise, dealing with environmental noise, that sort of stuff. And my background before that was in physics and music.
So in terms of the work that you're doing now, is the kind of the goal really to provide insights that might be used in kind of architecture and urban planning? Are those the kinds of main uses for the research you're doing at the moment?
Yeah. The overarching thrust of our project is to try and create a new index for describing urban sound. So we're trying to help planners and architects and consultants move away from just using the decibel, right? Just using the sound level as sort of their design criteria. Traditional noise control basically just tries to decrease the sound level, right? That's kind of the overarching approach to that. And we're trying to provide a new tool to where they consider more than just the sound level, consider how, you know, the other aspects of the sound, but also how that interacts with the visual environment, with the environmental factors, and with people's personal factors, how that all interacts to create an actual perceptual thing instead of just, oh, is this noise loud?
See, that's really interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, as a historian, I'm sort of aware of the history of acoustics and of sound management and the way in which, you know, the kind of sound proofing and the focus on decibels with which we're familiar now is kind of very much a product of the early 20th century. And that's very much a product of experts, you know, of people saying, well, I'm an expert on soundproofing. You know, I know what to do to make this environment work from a sound perspective. Whereas it sounds to me like what you're doing is kind of handing back some authority and some agency to people who experience these places. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, it's definitely more of sort of a space user focused sort of approach of, you know, rather than sort of dictating, we need to make this quieter. Instead, we can say, what do people actually care about? What actually forms their perception in these spaces?
And so thinking sort of back to before the pandemic, if we can think back that far at the moment, seems like a very long time ago. You know, what were the kind of challenges with doing that kind of research before the pandemic? What were the kind of chief obstacles you have to overcome in doing this kind of work?
Well, one of the big ones is just data collection, right? So we're in our project, you know, to build sort of a machine learning model, we need to get a lot of data in order to train a model, in order to tease out all of these sort of interacting and statistical relationships. We need to have a lot of data for that. And so the only way we can collect that data right now is basically go out to these spaces and ask people. So we conduct a massive survey of thousands of responses in, I think we're now at like 17 different locations in Europe, locations being like urban spaces, right? So you go to a park and that's one location. You go to an urban square, that's another location. And so we need to ask people, do you find this soundscape pleasant? Do you find it vibrant? These sorts of things. And so doing that on a large scale is very challenging. Also, it's again, because our approach is all about this context, we kind of need to do this in situ. We need to go to these spaces in order to get this validity of people are experiencing the holistic space, right? And that's challenging from a scientific perspective of how do we control variables if we're just going out into a space, right? It's difficult to change one thing. We kind of have to approach it as a holistic thing. Otherwise, the whole premise doesn't really work.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm sort of reminded of, you know, late 19th century people who are working on smell, and their main thing that they're trying to do is separate smell from everything else because they want to know what is purely down to smell. But I guess now, as you're saying, now kind of we've got the opposite situation. We're trying to understand sound alongside other senses.
And that pathway was necessary. You know, we couldn't be doing some of the work that we're doing now without people who had said, well, let's separate everything else and just look at the sound. Just look at, you know, very specific parts of it. But I think we've kind of moved to a point where we need to be adding everything else back in.
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of then during the pandemic, how has your work with sound been affected by the pandemic, and what's your experience been of trying to do research around sound during the pandemic?
So the biggest thing for us was, you know, we can't keep doing our surveys, right? Because you can't stop people on the street during a pandemic. That just doesn't work. Also, people aren't in the spaces is the other bit. But that also kind of provided a unique opportunity, right? Of all of these spaces that we had surveyed the year before and done thousands of recordings in, now have no people in them and have much less traffic noise. And so we had this opportunity to go back out and repeat our acoustic measurements and capture what those soundscapes were like without people there and without traffic there. And so now the work that we're currently doing is, you know, we've done sort of the face level analysis of how much did the sound level decrease? How did the sound change? Now we are trying to take sort of an initial form of our model and predict how people would have perceived that space if they were there, right? Because some people did use those spaces. And that can help us figure out, all right, if we actually can do some mitigation measures in the future, how would that interact with the space itself and lead to new perception? Would people find it a calmer space if we removed all of the traffic noise in it, right? And so that was sort of a unique opportunity, while at the same time, you know, making it much more difficult for us to do some of the work that we had planned to do.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, the idea that it gives you a kind of much more of a kind of blank acoustic canvas in the sense that you've got a lot of the space there still, but not the stuff that fills that space. Is an amazing comparison. I mean, I suppose, you know, lots of the time when acousticians are working with spaces, they want to get a sense of just the space on its own and then add sound back in. So I guess you've kind of been, in a sense, given that opportunity for comparison.
It's also kind of that, you know, the sort of extreme ideal of a traditional noise approach is exactly what happened, right? We completely remove negative noise sources. That's kind of the ideal version of a traditional noise control. And so the question we're asking is, did that actually make it better, right? If we were able to do the extreme version of what noise control aims to do, would that work? And I think some of what we're seeing is kind of, but not entirely, which is kind of the whole point. It's not just about removing negative sounds. It's not just about decreasing the sound level.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So in some ways, it's kind of validating your previous method by exposing the faults of that kind of older acoustic method, which was so focused on noise. I mean, yep. In terms of what you found then in comparing the two, you know, pre-pandemic and pandemic soundscapes, apart from obviously it being sort of, I suppose, quieter in some respects, is there anything else that's really stood out for you in terms of the differences between the soundscapes?
I mean, so one of the things that we found in our first paper on this was it depends on the location, right? It depends on what type of your location you're in, of whether, like, how much of a decrease you actually saw in the noise level, how much of a change that you saw. And some of it is how you would expect, right? So spaces that we had looked at, which were traffic heavy, right? So to give an example, we had like Camden Town here in London. We had Euston Road, where we'd gone and done surveys. Those are very traffic heavy spaces. They'd seen quite a big decrease in sound level. But then Regent's Park saw basically no change, right? So it's context dependent, was one thing. It's not a universal decrease in sound levels across the city. And then now what we're trying to do, like I said, is try to model this, and we don't really have the results from that yet.
Yeah.
So it's not clear yet how we might think that the soundscape has changed.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that some spaces change very little and some spaces do kind of really change. And I suppose it's interesting you mentioned there one of the big factors seems to be the noise of, you know, vehicular transport of cars and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
I mean, so kind of expanding out from kind of your research, do you think the pandemic as a whole has kind of transformed people's relationships with sound at all? Or do you think that we're kind of still living in the same kind of acoustic world that we were before the pandemic?
So I thought quite a lot about this when you sent it over. And I think the conclusion I've sort of come to is, I think the direct effects of people's changing relationship with sound from the pandemic will sort of revert to the mean, right? I think, for instance, one of the other studies that we did during the pandemic was looking at noise complaints. You know, as you said, that's historically what you end up getting. We looked at noise complaints during the lockdown in London compared to the year before, and it's a 50% increase. Like, it's a marked increase. As soon as the lockdown started, you get this surge in new noise complaints. And so that obviously shows that there is a new relationship with sound somewhere. Something is causing this. But I think that direct impact will kind of reduce back down, right? That's going to revert to the mean. I don't think that'll be a lasting thing. But the other social impacts of the pandemic will themselves impact our relationship with sound. So as we have this new conversation about working from home so much more, I think that will have a knock-on effect of more people working from home will pay more attention to, you know, the sound isolation in their homes. And so that will sort of drive a lasting change. Whereas the pandemic itself, I don't tend to think so. I think that will revert.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, isn't it? Because, you know, in some ways that might explain some of the upticks in noise complaints. It's not just that more people are at home, so we're kind of listening, we're hearing other people around us more when we're at home, but also the fact that our workspaces have now blurred with our home spaces. And as you say, so many people are doing work from home, and our expectations of the soundscapes of work have therefore been kind of taken with us into our homes. I mean, do you think that the kind of huge uptick in things like, you know, Zoom and the use of kind of audiovisual technologies as part of work, do you think that's going to have an impact on the way we engage with sound at all, I wonder? Or, you know, in terms of, you know, obviously there's a big difference kind of speaking to people over the Zoom all the time rather than being in a meeting room with them, for example. Do you think that's had an impact at all?
That's a good question. I don't really know. I think that's a bit outside of my particular area, because I focus mostly on people's perception of outdoor environmental sounds, and not so much their interaction with sort of virtual sound. So I'm not really certain how that particular thing will impact people.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's interesting, isn't it, that there is the shift in our exterior soundscapes, in those outside soundscapes, has I think probably been just as big as some of the shifts in our interior soundscapes. And I guess we tend to kind of separate the two quite a lot in the way that we work with them. We tend to work with one or the other. I mean, so moving on, do you think what do you think the future of sound will therefore be? You know, do you think that, you know, working from home, the rise in noise complaints, for example, that we've had in the pandemic, the change in the soundscapes of public spaces of the sort that your research has been looking at, do you think all of that will have a bigger impact moving forwards? And do you think the kind of the research that you've been able to do will have an impact there as well?
I mean, I certainly hope so. you know, we might hope that, yeah, as people used public spaces so much more during the lockdown, right? They became much, I think, much more appreciative of access to things like parks. That there will be increased attention paid to those sorts of spaces and the soundscapes of those spaces. I also think that perhaps one of the lasting effects will be, you know, during the pandemic and during the lockdowns, people noticed new sounds, right? They noticed things like birdsong more. That was sort of the common thing that we saw articles and discussion about. And they've also experienced decreased noise traffic or traffic noise. And increase like bicycle use and that sort of stuff. And all those sorts of things, I think, will interact with each other. And hopefully, you know, as we see people appreciating bikes and bike lanes more, and realizing that, oh, you can have this space, which maybe isn't actually quieter, right? But we've replaced all that car traffic noise with now human sounds, right? Of people on bicycles, people sitting and eating outside, that sort of thing. Maybe it's not actually quieter, but it's such a much more pleasant and vibrant environment rather than just a street with cars on it. Hopefully, like I hope that that will sort of feed into each other and people will appreciate that sort of space more and will get more of a push to encourage that sort of design and that sort of thinking.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I think, so in a way, what's happened, I suppose, is that people's expectations of the soundscape have changed, and I guess the kind of the elongated periods of lockdown that we've had, the sheer length of the pandemic, has meant that people have, it's allowed that change in expectations to happen in a way that it might not have done if we were only in lockdown for, say, a month and then we were kind of back to normal again.
I do hope so. I still would go back to my sort of initial answer of I'm not certain that it will be people's new experience with the soundscape which will drive those sorts of changes. I'm not certain that that's necessarily a powerful enough driver. I think it will be sort of the other things of recognizing the value of things like biking and outdoor dining and that sort of stuff that will last, and that is what will change their relationship with the soundscape.
So it's interesting. So it's less a conscious product of attempts to shift the soundscape and more an accidental product of the yeah. pandemic and the other social changes that it's forced through.
Yeah,
that's really interesting. Well, thank you so much, Andrew, for chatting. It's been a real pleasure and some really interesting insights there. And I will look forward to seeing how our soundscape changes in the next couple of years.
Sure. Thanks very much for having me. I really enjoyed the conversation.